Hey, ho!
Choke points.
Let's go.
Brought to you by Acton's Quality Roofing. The free coffee's back. After a two-year pandemic break, you can finally get a free cup of your favorite coffee at your favorite rest area. And Chris is going to tell us how this happened.
Well, this is one of the most popular programs that the state runs, actually. It's the one that allows volunteer groups to provide free coffee and water at 34 of the 47 rest areas in the state. The other 13 are a little too remote to make a good spot for volunteer groups, so that's not why it's not at all of them. The volunteer groups get to spread their messages, they get to raise donations, and to provide some coffee and conversation, a great way to kind of break up a trip if you need it. The Washington State Department of Transportation's Barbara LeBeau says it was shut down to keep COVID in check.
This is a very popular program, and it had been on hold since 2020 just due to the pandemic and safety concerns, just making sure it is safe both for the volunteers who do this and the traveling public.
LeBeau says the conditions have changed enough to allow the volunteers back inside those kiosks, but the volunteer groups must provide proof that their workers are vaccinated.
We did need to just make sure that we had a good process in place and that we knew it would be safe and that levels were down enough and precautions had changed enough to make this a workable solution.
Volunteers on state land are still subject to the vaccine mandate under the governor's emergency order. Masking, however, will not be required.
Because it's outdoors, there won't be a requirement to wear a mask, although certainly that's optional and voluntary and whatever people feel comfortable with, they should do.
So starting this weekend, actually tomorrow, you will start seeing the free coffee signs showing up at those rest areas and the volunteers setting up at the kiosks. LeBeau says it could be hit or miss for a little while as those volunteer groups apply and get prepped up for heading back out.
Not every site will be staffed every single day, but they do put out signs, and you'll see the people in the kiosks as well, but they do put out signs when they have the free coffee available. So if you're stopping in a rest area and you see that sign, you know, you can come by and get a cup of coffee.
LeBeau says the free coffee program is a great addition to the rest areas and their mission, which is to keep the road clear of drowsy drivers.
If you're ever feeling that you are dozing off or you're too tired, our message is always to find a safe place to stop and take a rest.
And this is a huge deal for some of these volunteer groups who get a lot of their, almost all of their funding from these kind of setups. Many of them have been doing this for years at the same rest area. If you're a volunteer group that's looking to see if you can get in on this, so you can go to mynorthwest.com and find a link about how you can apply this year. That's all being done via email. In the past, you had to like send in notes via regular mail, but now there's an email system. And so you can figure out how to sign up there. And yeah, so the free hot coffee is back.
Why the vaccination mandate? These are usually outdoors, right?
Yes, they are. But under the governor's mandate, which is still in effect, anybody who is a volunteer on state land must follow the vaccine guideline. It's just like a contract worker that they might have brought on to work on a state project or in a state property. That's still subject to the governor's mandate, which he hasn't relinquished however many 800 plus days since he put it in effect. So that's why it still applies to these particular groups.
Right. And usually it's not just coffees, I remember. You get cookies, too, sometimes.
They have discontinued the cookie part of that. And actually, they have several years ago, but volunteer groups still kind of kept providing them because of a food service, and no one is required to take a food handling safety course.
Seriously? Like,
so you can't
just have a bag of Oreos there?
No, can't do it.
Can you have a cookie vending machine at least?
Well, the cookie vending machine is sent to the vendor, which is under contract from the state. That's why they can't provide free Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi, because there's a contract for that vending machine, and the state wants a few dollars for that. So they can only provide coffee and non-soda-related drinks and no food. That's something that...
So Aunt Mildred can't just voluntarily bake her oatmeal raisin cookies and put them in a Tupperware.
She could, but the state will find out about it and probably tell them, hey, we didn't take a food safety handling class.
That's your next project.
I'd love to see the state go after grannies and cookies.
Yeah. Well, because I was like, Barbara, where's my cookie? I want my cookie. And she's like, no, that's not, you can't do it. One of the kind of the changes that they're going to make
sure.
Is there
any evidence that anybody ever got sick from eating grandma's cookies?
Well, I will check that. I didn't go that in depth with Barbara LeBeau at the Department of Transportation, but maybe I should have. I've been on vacation for a week. I'm letting things slide.
Yeah, man.
I'm letting things slide. That's,
great cookie investigation.
That's your next challenge. K Governor Inslee gave us a half hour yesterday, and we talked about vaccine mandates and his emergency powers and whether Washington drivers are going to break on the gas tax. We're going to play those clips tomorrow. Today, we are going to talk about a pair of intertwined crises, homelessness and mental health.
What kind of progress has the state made in building more beds for mental health patients, the people who are the chronic users of medical services, sometimes go to, you know, emergency rooms, which are just not equipped, you know, to handle those problems?
Yeah, well, listen, huge challenge. We know this is a crisis across the state of Washington. It's not just Seattle. It's not just Spokane. It's a statewide issue. In fact, it's a nationwide issue as well. The states that have had huge growth or have been experienced this, we don't have enough housing for people in total, including those with mental health challenges. So what we've done is we're investing over $800 million in this year's budget, and it's a huge sum. It's the most by considerable order of magnitude of what we've invested before in housing. But it has a couple elements that are what I would consider new. One is it insists on rapid supportive housing. Rapid meaning we need to get people into situations rapidly in, you know, weeks, months, not years and decades. And this is very important, and I insisted on it. I'm glad we were successful on this in getting the legislators to put the money into things that will happen in months. And that means to get people under a roof and to the extent humanly possible, private with supportive housing for those with mental health needs. It is an enormous investment, and we're trying to do it as fast as humanly possible. We're certainly committed along our right-of-ways. And I just had a meeting yesterday with our right-of-way team to stop people living in squalor along our freeways and get them into supportive housing. And that includes some tiny village housing where you basically have a small set. You got a roof. You got access to hygienic conditions, place to cook if you need to. That works. And we need to start doing that as rapidly as humanly possible. I know some people have resisted that. But we've got to get people out of these squalor, living in squalor in these tents, blocking our right-of-ways, blocking our parks, and having them living in unhealthy conditions. So huge investment in that regard. Now, the more sort of what you think about the institutional settings, we are changing how we provide mental health services from one big hospital at Western State to more community settings, so that we can provide mental health in the modern way, which is more in your community rather than one giant hospital that might be 200 miles away from where you live. And we are building community settings around the state to do that. But before I leave this, I want to leave something that's very important. I think that sometimes we forget because it's almost like a no-brainer. If you have a million people moving into your state, but you only build housing for 250 or 300,000 people, you're going to get homelessness. We have to build more housing. We have to have additional roofs.
And well, you tried that. You tried to get the zoning changed, but even the Democrats,
right.
The Democrats wouldn't go along with that.
We this is a work in process. So we took our first crack at it this year, and we'll be back next year. And we're already in talks to find a meaningful way to stop regulatory provisions, meaning zoning, to stop building housing for people. And right now, vast swaths of our cities, including Seattle, are off limits. You can't build anything to actually house people. So we have to change some of our zoning laws to allow more dense housing, particularly near rapid transit areas. And I actually believe we're going to have a good shot at getting this done in the next session. Our first effort resulted in a lot of debate, but not the bill passing, at least both chambers. And I actually believe we're going to get something done next year. We have to build more housing.
But we also have closed off a lot of land to development, haven't we? I mean, there are people who say if you want to lower the price of housing, put more land on the market, too.
Could, but I don't think people want to see subdivisions up to the boundaries of Mountain Rainier National Park. I don't believe that. And then have to build freeways with $1 billion of investment to have freeways from, you know, Paradise on Mountain Rainier National Park down to Belltown.
I think that's an exaggeration. one more thing. You mentioned the squalor. I don't know how often you get into Seattle. I drive through every day. And I'm not at all unsympathetic to the plight of people who have no place to live. But, you know, for the number one state in U.S. News and World Report, to welcome people to Seattle with the way those freeways look and the graffiti and the tents and the garbage is it's kind of embarrassing, don't you think?
I share that view. That's why I'm so intensely committed to getting improvements in this in program. That's why I'm pleased that my insistence that we address this quickly rather than slowly has been followed by the legislature. I fought tooth and nail and got this requirement that we do this rapidly rather than slowly. It's why I've got our teams working diligently to make sure that we actually get this done. And we need to respond to two parts of our psyche. I know you, Dave, and I know you have two things going on. One, you have a big heart for people. You don't like people living in squalor. It's just it's heartbreaking to see people living like that. But you also have a part that this is kind of an offense of our pride in our community and the danger and dislocation of not being able to enjoy your parks and having people live in dangerous situations on our right-of-ways. So we need to use both of those values to get people into settings that are safe and off of our public lands. And I'm committed to that. And I think the public demands it. And we've got to act quickly. Now, again, I want to come back to this issue. To do this, you have to have some place for people to go. Under the Constitution, there's a judicial decision by a judge here that says you have to have a place to go if you're going to remove them from the right-of-way. And so we have to provide that shelter space, rapid supportive housing, in a way that is safe for people. And that's what we're committed to doing.
And will every city have to participate? I see Edmonds just is passing a law to prevent people from camping, but I don't believe they actually have any homeless shelters in the city limit. I'm not sure about Mercer Island, where I live. I presume what you don't want to see happen is for everybody's homeless problem to be sent to downtown Seattle, right?
That's correct. And so cities will need to cooperate with this effort if they're going to receive state grants. So we're going to be quite insistent that if you're a city and you want state dollars to help with this, you're going to have some, a real commitment to reducing this problem. And so we have the grant making strings, if you will, and we will have requirements that you comply. And frankly, we have not had, as good a compliance from some cities as we expect. So that's going to change. We need a wholesale shoulder to the wheel commitment to reduce the squalor on our public lands. And I'm committed to that.
Governor Jay Inslee, the other question people always are asking is, why does he still have emergency powers? And we'll hear that explanation tomorrow on Seattle's Morning News.
Wish we had more time. I have so much to say about that commentary. Your daily dose of kindness brought to you by Heritage Homecraft, a surprise visit at the memorial site in Buffalo. CBS's Jerika Duncan was there.
Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen's shirt said it all. Choose love. Today, Allen and his teammates traveled to the site of the massacre, bringing a bit of joy to those in pain.
It's a motto that I think maybe that we should start adopting as a country.
They joined city officials, community organizations, and volunteers to donate food, diapers, and other necessities, providing emergency relief while Top Supermarket remains an active crime scene. For many, it is the only market for miles. Now free bus rides are being provided to take residents to another grocery store. 67-year-old Lodina Clyburn grew up in the neighborhood.
This wasn't just a supermarket.
This is the Sunday place when you don't want to cook dinner. We come here, we socialize, we run into each other.
The majority of people who live in this section of Buffalo are Black. It's why the accused gunman targeted this community and why Jeremy Hoyle and his family felt the need to pay their respects.
Just want to be supportive. And like I say, just want to be an ally. I think we all have to do that.
Not far from that memorial site, we spotted Sandra Fleming leaving a counseling session. Fleming was friends with Celestine Cheney, one of the 10 victims killed.
What do you say to people who say they're fine and they feel like they can handle this on their own?
Don't fake the funk. Go and get help, counseling. Don't sit in the house as I did. Go out and get it. I think you'll feel better.
That is Jerika Duncan reporting.
And now here he is wearing his fire engine red shoes, G. Scott from the G. and Ursula Show. You and I both know that burritos have a serious fundamental structural deficiency in that they do not remain folded.
I know. He's a little on fire today.
And that's why I wanted to bring up the solution invented by, I guess, some college student?
No, an all-women team at Johns Hopkins University.
Uh-huh. All right, whatever. We can all promote our tribe. That's fine. Anyway, it's called Tasty Tape, and it's edible tape. Did you see this? I mean, you touch more food as a DoorDash driver in a day than I do in a year. So.
Gosh, I hope you don't touch the food.
I was, let's see, 10 seconds years old finding that out. What? There is burrito tape?
Yeah.
Whoever did this, genius, hug them. Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. And it's edible, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
100% edible. They won't say what it's made out of, though, until they get a patent. But I'm assuming it's some sort of like what they make the biodegradable cups at, like a corner.
I am still at the age where if there's stuff to make a burrito, Colleen or Dave or Sully, hey, can you help me? Can you wrap it for me so it can stay?
Yeah.
Now I don't need help. I just grab that tape and slap it on there.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Best invention since the flat-bottomed crunchy taco. Don't you think those are fabulous,
too? Oh, you bringing back tacos again?
Well,
you got tacos
we're talking
on your
about
mind.
Burritos, and so I'm thinking tacos, too. Mm-hmm. And the ones you can buy that have the flat bottom so they stand up on your plate while you fill it.
Yeah, but then you eat it and squeeze out the sides.
I know, but it's fun while it lasts.
It looks good, but it's just a sloppy mess. Now that you got the tape, though, you can tape the whole thing up.
So everybody likes the tape, right?
I love the tape.
I don't know why you need it.
What?
I've never had a burrito fall apart on me.
Because you ain't had no real burrito, fam.
Well, I roll them on up myself, and yeah, I've never had problems.
He eats it in one bite. That's
yeah,
why.
That's true.
Nah, Sully, you ain't been having no real burritos, bro.
Rice, beans, meat, cheese, lettuce, olives, stuff in there. Yeah, and a big old flour tortilla. Yeah, I've never
Are you one of those that goes to Chipotle and have no problem with the serving?
I've never been to Chipotle.
Oh boy, see,
I don't believe.
Okay. Okay.
Conversation.
I've been to similar places, but I maybe have only been there once or twice, but I prefer Qdoba, probably.
But here's what I want to ask.
But those come wrapped in a thing, so you peel the foil and they stay together.
Well, what I want to know is why can't all packaging be edible? So that when you're opening a bag of chips, you can just sort of bite the bag, swallow it, and then reach and get the chips. Mm-hmm. Instead of creating all that trash.
I just didn't expect for you to say that. I mean, I hear what you're saying. I don't like that. I like the idea of going in there getting my chips out of the bag. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like pistachios, mm-hmm. right? I like the motion of cracking to get it inside of it. I don't like the pistachios already ready to go, ready for you to eat. I just don't like those.
You want some exercise.
I want some exercise when I do it.
Finger exercise. Yeah. Get them more.
But more and more, we are starting to get inventions or innovations when it comes to food. One place I got to promote and talk about that I was thinking about since you guys brought this up. Have you guys been to the Milk Bar inside of the Cosmopolitan Hotel in Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Yes!
I know what you're talking about.
I mean, come
cereal
on.
Milk. No, I watched the whole cereal Netflix milk? Documentary about this. So what she did, and I'm blanking on her name, and I feel really bad about this, but the founder of Milk Bar, she's a master at what she does in baking, and she decided one night to soak cornflakes in milk then use that milk to make her creations.
I invented that when I was six.
I know, but you didn't turn it into a million-dollar empire called the Milk Bar.
Now, it's overpriced. Don't get me wrong. Oh. It's overpriced, but it's cool. You know what I mean? You have the opportunity to get that cereal milk. Mm-hmm. Like, you mean to tell me somebody just thought of a business? Like you said, you were 6 years old. All of us can relate to cereal milk.
So can you get, like, Cheerios milk?
Well, no, she does it specifically out of cornflakes
because
it's a specific taste.
Right. So you get that, but you get other things there as well. You get some of their, like the cookie cake and all the different ice creams and stuff. But I'm just saying, if you get an opportunity, go up there, go to the Milk Bar. It's a great place.
Here's my advice.
Sure.
This is what's great about hanging around a 3-year-old and a 9-year-old
is that
this is the kind of stuff they come up with that you forget to enjoy as an adult.
Right.
And they bring that joy back in your life where you're like, yeah, you're right. It is better to eat cake with your hands.
I invented cookie milk as a 7-year-old where I just put chocolate chip cookies in the milk, let them soak,
and then
drink it and leave the chocolate chips for last.
Hey, I see you, Dave Ross. Wait, one last thing before you go. When it comes to tacos, hot sauce, salsa, or ketchup on your tacos?
Ketchup? Get out of here.
Hey, don't knock it till you try
Gross.
It.
Gross. Get out. Don't You're t- kicked off the show.
Wait, SMN kicking folks off show? When did you right. guys get
How
this
dare
way?
You suggest that,
James,
sir?
Help! James, help!
Gian Ursula, 9 o'clock on Cairo Radio. Their cookbook will be appearing soon.
Ugh.
And this is the weekend. This is the weekend we're finally going to get the spring weather we've been waiting for, and that means Lake Union, Lake Washington, Puget Sound will fill up with boaters. But as Cairo News Radio's Nicole Jennings reminds us, safe boating requires doing your homework.
We all love that time of year when the weather at last starts to warm up after a long winter. But the King County Sheriff's Office Marine Unit dreads it. That's because as soon as the weather warms up, people die on the water. Derek Van Dyke with the Washington State Parks Boating Program says in this part of the country, no matter how warm the air gets, our water stays cold enough to be fatal.
Any water below 70 degrees is cold water and could cause hypothermia and shock. Most of our bodies of water never get over 70 degrees in Washington State.
Even Lake Washington in August may be 72 on the surface, but a lot colder the deeper you go. Cold water shock causes your limbs to freeze up as your body focuses on protecting the vital organs. Within a few minutes, even a strong swimmer won't be able to move enough to get to shore. In some people, cold water shock can cause the heart vessels to contract as the heart rate spikes up, a combination that can lead to a heart attack. King County Sheriff Sergeant Rich Barton rescues people on the water with the Marine Unit, where he sees a lot of cold water shock.
It's not hypothermia. Hypothermia does happen. It takes a long time. This is a very rapid onset. It could take seconds. You have basically 10 to 15 seconds of, oh my God, I just went from 90 degrees to 50. And your body is in shock. It's going, what do I do? So I gasp. I take that initial big breath, and then you ingest water, and then you go down.
And of course, if you're panicking, you'll use up any energy that you do have that much faster. Whether people fall or jump, whether they're on a yacht or a paddleboard, Van Dyke says there's one thing the vast majority of people who die on the water have in common.
Last year, we lost 13 people boating, the year before 28, but 77% of our boating fatalities are not wearing a life jacket.
There are many reasons why people don't have life jackets, besides just wanting to look cool and get a tan. Life jackets are expensive, for one. The good ones may cost almost as much as a paddleboard itself. Also, many people may not realize that it's the law. Everyone in Washington who's on a boat must at least have a life jacket on board, though the safest idea is to wear one at all times. In fact, Lieutenant Alex Cropley, commanding officer of the Coast Guard Station Seattle, says some paddlecraft users are legally required to wear them.
One of the biggest segments where we see it is the paddlecraft users. So those people on kayaks, paddleboards, canoes don't realize that they're required to not only have that life jacket on board, but also, if it's an inflatable device, being wearing it.
You're also required to have a whistle so you can get help if you're out too far. If getting a life jacket is a problem for you, the State Parks Boating Program is here to help. Van Dyke says they've set up stands where you can borrow a life jacket for free for the day at 200 locations across the state, including popular water sport spots like Deception Pass State Park and the beaches along Lake Washington.
We want to make life jackets accessible. Not being able to afford a life jacket is not an excuse for not having one. We will get you a life jacket.
Another big problem is a lack of education, especially for people using paddlecraft. Van Dyke says unlike motorized boaters, paddleboarders, canoers, and kayakers don't need to take an exam before they get on the water, despite repeated attempts by legislators to pass such laws.
We have education mandatory for motorized boaters, but we do not have such a program for non-motorized. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't be educated.
So there are a lot of people on the water with no experience. In fact, meteorologist Ted Beener says paddleboard and kayak sales have shot through the roof the past couple of years, as the pandemic has had us all wanting to get outside.
It's a lot cheaper to do that, easy access. They're selling right off the shelves as we speak. And you're going to see a lot more of those kinds of vessels out on the water starting this weekend.
He predicts the stores will be sold out of paddleboards and kayaks by Memorial Day.
One other key point that's different this year, gas prices. You're going to see a lot more human-powered boating this year than in the past because people just don't want to pay that $4 plus a gallon of fuel for those motorboats.
Unfortunately, Beener says what's also unique about this year is the water is more dangerous than ever.
We've had a wet spring. That snowmelt process as we head into summer is going to keep those river temperatures in the 40s.
Van Dyke with the state parks puts that in perspective.
But think about a swimming pool. You know, most swimming pools, you jump in, people think they're cold, and they're really above 80 degrees.
So what can help? Sergeant Barton says if you plan to get in the water, at least give yourself an idea of what you're in for.
What we tell people is splash yourself. Get yourself wet. Actually splash your face and see what that effect is going to be with the 58, 60 degree water in a 90 degree day.
But the best thing you can do, besides getting that life jacket and whistle, is to educate yourself. The State Parks Boating Program website has free resources where you can learn the basics of boating and paddleboarding, and you can quiz yourself. This year, State Parks is also piloting a boater education program. The education process doesn't have to be super involved, but Van Dyke says just putting in that little bit of time to learn the basics may end up saving your life.
It's not a toy. The water is cold. Be prepared. Know the weather before you go. Know the water conditions before you go. Have the proper, the legally required safety equipment, the whistle, the life jacket. Wear your life jacket, and then don't overestimate your skills.
Nicole Jennings, Cairo News Radio.
And this morning's water temperature in Puget Sound is 46 degrees. And Nicole, did you see the video of the rescue on Lake Washington yesterday?
I did, and I saw it up close. I drive across the lake on my commute, and I saw how choppy those waters were. It was scary enough from the bridge.
Yeah. So we do this every year, but I guess we have to because people don't listen to it. And what works? I mean, is it enough to once again scare people, or do you think that eventually it'll have to be part of the law?
This is the second year in a row I've done these stories, and yeah, I do think it's going to have to be part of the law because clearly, you know, getting the word out there and scaring people, for lack of a better term, is not working. And I have to admit, I'm guilty of this. I did these stories last year. I also bought a paddleboard last year. I was one of those pandemic paddlers, and I just now got a life jacket for it. So, you know, it's like they said, it's expensive. It doesn't come with the paddleboard. You kind of think, well, I'm a good swimmer. Maybe I don't need it. So, you know, knowing that it's the law to take an exam and take a class, just like you would if you were getting your driver's license, I think that that would really help people out.
Cairo News Radio's Nicole Jennings. Nicole, thank you.
Thank you. You can ring my
bell, Rachel Bell. Seattle's Morning News. Good morning to you. I'm Colleen O'Brien, along with Dave Ross and Chris Sullivan. It is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. Rachel introduces you to a woman who's raising money to fight Asian hate.
When the pandemic hit, Renton's Kat Lou did what a lot of Americans did. She started baking, but there were particular flavors that she craved.
I wanted to bake the Asian way, where I could eat all these foods that brought me so much comfort, like my egg tarts, things that I've had in Hong Kong, things I've had in my childhood, thinking back on the mooncakes, the milk breads, the mochis.
But she'd never baked any of these treats before, so she went online for recipes. But
there was no collective network or space where I could bounce an idea off of other people who are also interested in baking this way, right? So if I wanted to know, how do I make an egg tart? Do I use lard or do I use vegetable fat?
So Kat started a group on Facebook called Subtle Asian Baking, a spinoff from the already existing Subtle Asian groups. What is Subtle Asian? This is Kat's interpretation.
So let's say I make a macaron and I use matcha. A macaron is a French creation. But by adding that matcha in there, now I have a subtle Asian baked goodie. It's a bit like fusion, right? Let's say I mix my dough with chopsticks. Let's say I'm making a chiffon cake that I remember my grandma made for me, filled with light cream and fresh fruits. She learned from restaurants in Vietnam. It's a chiffon cake with some French inspirations, but it's also very subtly Asian.
Kat started the group last May. May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, and it is since ballooned to 140,000 followers on Facebook and 130,000 on Instagram.
And not just Asians, right? We welcome, you know, anyone who wants to bake this way is welcome to join.
Last year, the media was reporting on a rash of anti-Asian hate crimes.
We decided to have a purpose, which is to help stop Asian hate, especially around May, which is the Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. We are asking bakers from around the world to host their own bake sales. They could be virtual, they could be in person, and then they could donate proceeds to a fundraiser that we've chosen as a community. So last year, we were raising funds for Welcome to Chinatown, which is a grassroots organization in New York City. We were able to buy 1,000 hot meals from local businesses and give them to older adults. This year, we're working with a former Seattle anchor, Michelle Lee's The Very Asian Foundation.
Subtle Asian Baking members have raised $30,000 since last May. Kat is half Vietnamese and half Chinese, and she says changing people's perceptions of Asians in America is a matter of life and death.
I've been a victim of hate crimes. I've been a victim of racism and microaggressions. So I feel a lot of fear and a lot, sometimes anger. Fortunately, we're in the Renton area. I do feel a lot safer. I used to live in Brooklyn area, but every time I hear something about a shooting that went on, you know, someone being pushed into the subways, Michelle Goh, Christina Yuna Lee, who are women who very much like me, you know, working women in their 30s, the same straight black hair, merely for existing for who they are and what they look like, were brutally murdered. You never know what will happen just for being who I am, just for being Asian. We were scared. I'm very frank about it, right?
Kat worked as a physical therapist for 13 years. But last year, thanks to Subtle Asian Baking getting some press, she was offered a cookbook deal and was able to quit her job to write Modern Asian Baking, which will be out next month.
So important for this book to come out now because representation really, really matters, not just during May, during AAPI month, during the entire year. You know, we are as American as anyone else. Yes, I celebrate all these Asian holidays, but I also celebrate Thanksgiving and Halloween and Christmas, you know, so we are not the others. We are as American as the next American.
To pre-order Modern Asian Baking or to donate to the hashtag Very Asian fundraiser directly or to have a fundraising bake sale of your own, go to mynorthwest.com/Rachel Bell.
I'm curious if, you know, this book would be good for somebody who didn't grow up with those flavors. You know, we are so lucky to live in a city where these flavors are available to us at all times. And it can be intimidating if your palate is not used to certain flavors. So how inviting is it for somebody who's not familiar?
I mean, I love all of those flavors personally as a white person. I mean, I did grow up even as a little kid eating a lot of Asian food in the Bay Area. But one of the things she talks about, of course, you always have these long interviews and you can't fit all the good stuff in. But she talks about miso in sweets and baking, which is something I've started doing recently too. So I think there's something about sometimes taking flavors you wouldn't expect to put into sweet. Just like, you know, in the past maybe 5-10 years, people have gotten really used to putting salt on a chocolate chip cookie, which is delicious.
Yes.
So she was talking about, actually, a good friend of mine makes a homemade chocolate miso ice cream. Yum. And she says, you know, just replacing salt in your baked goods with miso or even soy sauce. Like, I actually make a tahini miso granola that's really good.
Holy moly.
And here, like you said, we have so many Asian markets.
Yes.
So she was saying it's easier for us here than in a lot of places to find so many different ingredients that maybe are a little bit harder to find than miso usually. But food is such an interesting thing because, you know, yes, food can bring people together and food can be something easy to understand another culture, but it gets more complicated. I mean, when Trump was talking about building the wall, he would also talk about how much he loved Mexican food. And so sometimes it doesn't quite work. You know, people can go out for Chinese food and still be racist against Chinese people. But I think it's a good starting bridge. People want to eat. You know, people love baked goods. It's a good start. Doesn't always work.
Thank you, Rachel.
Sure.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthwest.com.